some consumers are worth far more than others to anyone interested in telling a story. Not only will some people spread your story more than others, but often they'll compete with each other to see who can do it more prominently. At the Robinhood fundraising dinners in New York, it's not unusual to see a Wall Street trader bid $700,000 for the right to bring six friends to the Victoria's Secret winter fashion show. In describing the large number of extremely wealthy art collectors at Art Basel Miami Beach, Amy Capolazzo of Christie's said, quote, "They'd prefer to spend $500,000 here or at auction on something they could buy privately for $50,000. These people are traders and they're incredibly savvy about markets." Actually, paying 10 times as much to show off isn't savvy, it's stupid. Until you realize that what they're buying isn't the art, it's the process. Lucy Mitchell Innes, a prominent art dealer, told The Times, "People want the art because their friends do. If it's unique and there's only one, it's less appealing." Not only the rich compete for the privilege of telling stories, we see precisely the same behavior in companies bidding up the price of domain names and consumers waiting in line to spend a dollar on a yellow bracelet for charity. It doesn't matter if you're selling $3 socks at Kmart or $3 million paintings in Miami. A lot of people want what everyone else is buying. Two more worldviews worth mentioning. First, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. The reason so many effective solutions take forever to get implemented is that the fear of change is greater than the cost of sticking with what you've got. In other words, people wait until they have a heart attack or get diabetes before they go on a diet. This is the most frustrating worldview a marketer can face. You believe in your product. You know your product will help people, but people refuse to notice it. Never mind, purchase it. One solution is to reconfigure your offering so that it's easier to start using. Salesforce.com did this with sales automation software. Instead of offering a product that requires spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to fix something that isn't broken, Salesforce.com salespeople get to offer the much smaller decision of buying a monthly service. The other solution is to break it. If your product, and by extension your marketing, breaks an existing system, the consumer has no choice but to buy your solution, or at least to notice it and consider it. Email worked this way. Once your customers and coworkers had email, you had to buy it as well, because your previously satisfactory communication strategy, fax and so on, was now broken. A second worldview. I like working with you. The reason that permission marketing and one-to-one marketing are so effective has nothing to do with the ethics of spam. Instead, these techniques work because they group together people with a similar worldview. The people you're talking to now are the prospects and customers that have a bias to work with you. When someone opts in to get email from dailycandy.com, they're making a clear statement about her worldview. That gives the site a leg up in communicating with their customers because they're able to frame their messages in a way that gets it heard. What are you doing to reward people who have a worldview like this? How can you help them spread the word that it's a good worldview to have? Putting frames to work. Imagine that your boss has charged you with introducing a new kind of salty snack food, a chip of some sort. In the old model, you'd identify a target market, find media that reached that market, create some advertising, and run it. You'd pay slotting allowances and get your bags of chips, in brightly colored packages, into the chip aisle of the supermarket. Perhaps you'd even run some coupons. Starting from a worldview model, you'd approach it differently. Understanding that the chip aisle of the supermarket is jammed, as is your target customer's ability to pay attention, you can start over by identifying a segment that might notice a news story, told in a different way. In this case, let's choose moms that believe salty snacks aren't healthy and my kids don't eat them. This mom doesn't go down the snack food aisle at the supermarket. She doesn't notice advertisements for snack foods either. She seems a poor prospect for this product, but if you can tell the right story, the market is yours for the taking. So you design the story. The chips will be made from soy, not potatoes. They will be non-GMO, organic, low-fat, and salted with a little sea salt and dulse for flavor, not sodium. The chips will come in a box, not a bag, and you won't sell them in the snack aisle at all. Instead, you'll pay to have them slotted in the produce department. Now you're telling a very different story. You're using frames to match the worldview of the segment you're trying to reach. And if you do it right, there's an excellent chance they'll notice the change in the environment and will give your story a try. If the chips are good and assuage mom's slight guilt over depriving her kids of chips, then you've made a convert. And no, moms with this worldview aren't a cohesive community. But moms are still moms, and moms talk to each other. Your target moms will start serving the chips at birthday parties and sending them into school with lunches. They might even mention how much their kids like the chips at the next neighborhood get-together. So the story spreads. Pretty soon, people who don't share their worldview will be seeking out the chips. Soon after that, you'll be able to move the chips to the snack aisle because you've shared your story and your audience will follow. Step 1. Every consumer has a worldview that affects the product you want to sell. That worldview alters the way they interpret everything you say and do. Frame your story in terms of that worldview, and it will be heard.